We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Beaver Sports Podcast, presented by On Point Community Credit Union. Your community, your place to bank. Join in. Here are your hosts, Mike Parker and John Warren.
Welcome into this week's edition of the Beaver Sports Podcast, presented by On Point Community Credit Union, providing our local communities with the banking and lending solutions they need to get ahead. On Point is a proud sponsor of the Oregon State Athletics Podcast, federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity. Mike Parker with John Warren, coming off a week and a weekend that was one of the more successful ones in recent Oregon State Athletics history. So many great things happening, baseball sweeping a series, the Oregon State men's basketball team sweeping in the Bay Area, soccer getting a tremendous win on the men's side to improve to 5-0, the OSU women's basketball team winning at Oregon, gymnastics posting its highest score of the year, two wrestlers winning Pac-12 championships, four qualifying for the Nationals. There was a lot going on, but one of the true highlights, John, of the weekend, among so many, was the great victory, historical in nature in a sense, the first time since 2003, the OSU women's soccer team defeated Stanford, third ranked in the country, in a thrilling 2-1 win. And coming out of it, the Beavers garner a couple of Pac-12 Player of the Week recognitions. Abby Schwartz, who is our guest on this week's podcast, along with Kaylin Freed, honored by the conference. Abby, who we'll talk to in just a moment, was named the Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Week. Kaylin Freed, the Defensive Player of the Week. And in a very real sense, Abby, thanks for taking time for us. Congratulations on that. Let's just start right with the moment, really, in a very thrilling sequence where both of you, Kaylin and yourself, clinched those awards when Kaylin made a play defensively, and about a minute later, you get the game-winning goal. Tell us a little bit. A lot of things to talk to you about today, but let's start with that incredible stretch of play against Stanford. What did Kaylin do to kind of save the game defensively, and then moments later, where did you find yourself?
It's funny, that play, that astonishing play that Kaylin made, where she headed it off the end line, right, almost went in the net. It was so close. She completely saved us on that one. Couldn't have been a better play. I had just come back on the field, so I was taken off for a chunk of time, and then I just come back on, and that happened. And I know we were all just biting our fingernails, just on the edge of our seat, but we knew we had it, and we started to build out of the back. We got the ball up. Bree made a great run, beat a player, and made an excellent cross. I timed it well, got my foot on it, and that was it. It was a team goal, and it was from back to front. It was just the whole team's effort was amazing.
And is it true that all that happened within the last minute of the game?
It is. Yes, we were counting down. I think when the goal actually went in, I think there was approximately 7 minutes left in the game.
Okay.
And for that last 7 minutes, we were just all about keeping in there and finding the corners, doing absolutely everything we could to secure that victory. And in the end, it was exactly enough.
When you're heading downfield and it's all unfolding perfectly and the cross comes, did it come fast enough where you didn't get nervous, or did you have a little hesitation, like, I better hit this, I better hit it right?
You know, going back to that moment, I can still see it, which is very funny. It felt very slow motion. It didn't feel rushed. It didn't feel super frantic. It just felt like we had secured it. We knew what we were going to do. We had practiced that ball a million times in practice, and we had been taught every single day that those coming weeks that we need to get numbers in the box, we need to attack the ball, we need to be first to it, and all that training paid off, and that's exactly what we did. It was drilled into our brains.
A 2-1 win over Stanford, a landmark kind of win. Tell us what the moment felt like. You've described that last incredible sequence with Kaylin and yourself and Brianna. But what about when those 7 minutes then ticked down and you held off a great Stanford team 2-1, what it meant to all of you?
Yeah, I can remember the final shot Stanford took, and Bridget Skiba had the ball in her hands and the clock was counting down the last 10 seconds, and everybody looked around, and I just remember thinking, like, we did it. We actually did it. We beat Stanford, and the whistle blew, it was over, and the rush onto the field was ecstatic and unreal. And I remember all of us just being tackled in that huddle and pure joy in everybody's voices and just excitement and enthusiasm that was well deserved.
That is fantastic. I'm curious, how much pressure did you go through in the last 7 minutes after you scored in such a great team that they are? They had to make a push, didn't they?
Yes. Yeah, it was probably the most intense last few minutes we ever played, because as Stanford showed in the previous games, they can score at any time. They have extreme talent, and they can find the net at any point when they wanted to, especially against some of the more previous teams. They scored in the last few minutes, so we knew we had to stay turned on. We couldn't let down. It was a whole 90 minutes that we had to be tuned in for.
Abby, you talked about the ecstatic nature of the celebration over the win and the realization that you did it. That would happen, I think, even if you were playing a match in the fall or really any time. But that sense of joy that you kind of released in that moment with that kind of win, do you think is it even greater for all of you when there's been so much uncertainty, so many things you've had to go through, a season postponed into this time frame in the fall? Did it mean even more just to be back on the field with your teammates and have a moment like that together, given all of the circumstances you've been going through?
Yeah, after the past year, any soccer we got to play was great soccer. That's what I had in my brain coming into this season. Everything had been postponed, and I was genuinely just excited to take the pitch after so many protocols and delays and extending times for traveling and all these different rules that have been implemented. Anytime we got to step on the pitch and play against any opponent, mm-hmm. it was amazing and just what we needed. And to secure that victory was just a demonstration of how much we wanted it, how much we wanted to play. Again, regardless of the team, yes, it was insane to have beaten Stanford, but I think that reaction still would have been the same if it was Cal or if it was Portland or if it was any of those teams, because any victory right now is a victory for soccer all around, because we haven't been able to play the game we love. We haven't been given the opportunities due to this pandemic, and I think that sums it up pretty well.
Wow, what a great attitude. Abby Schwartz, our guest on this week's edition of the Beaver Sports Podcast. We are just learning now in my conversations with the baseball players for pregame shows and a few other things. Mike's been talking to basketball players about road trips and how different they are. For you, have you guys hit the road as a team, and do you have to like be isolated in your rooms? I think you do. If that's true and all that, how taxing is that to have it be so different and so non-social unless you're out on the field?
Yes, so the girls actually did. We flew to Idaho. I actually, unfortunately, did not. I was sick at this time, but I was told about the entire trip, and I know that it was very strict. The masks were on 24/7. The girls were very restricted to their hotel rooms. I remember there was a designated room, I think, for homework if they wanted a quieter space to work, but we weren't really eating that much as a group. It was very individualized and keeping people separate, all for safety precautions, which is really understandable. But I think the girls really missed that team element, being able to go out and explore the different states that we go to and explore the different scenery around, because that's part of traveling. That's part of going and playing these teams, is experiencing where we are together and as a whole. So I definitely think that's missed and can be hard for us.
Abby, we started in visiting with you on this week's edition of the Beaver Sports Podcast with the immediate and the ecstatic, joyful moment of your great win over Stanford. But as we like to do anytime we have the opportunity to converse with an Oregon State student athlete, we love to kind of work back to how it is you ended up here and how it is you're having these experiences. So let's touch a little bit on that. We did so on a local show earlier this week, but you're from Moody, British Columbia. Maybe you could fix that in our minds a little bit, where that is geographically, but how you ended up crossing the border and coming to Oregon State.
Yeah. Poor Moody. It's a small little town. It's beautiful. It's very similar to here weather-wise. It's very close to the border. I think the drive for me down here is about 8 hours. Mm-hmm. So one of the lesser drives, which is actually quite nice. I was a part of a Whitecaps program, so it was for girls all across British Columbia. We were all in this team together of all ages, and the point of this team is to train girls for the national programs and to inevitably go down to the States and play soccer down here, because this is where the real intense competition is, and that's what we all crave. Anybody in that program wants to go to be at the best of the best and play against the best of the best, and I knew that's what I wanted. So I decided to start looking down here and started talking to different coaches and getting a sense of the different schools down here and the different environments. And originally when I started that process, I tore my ACL. So I was kind of held back for a little bit. And it wasn't until my senior year at high school that I started talking to Matt and a few different schools than who I was previously talking to. And after visiting the campus and seeing the staff and the team and the culture here, I knew that this is where I wanted to be. I wanted to be a part of a program that was rebuilding themselves and that had such amazing potential and had such a strong leader. And I knew that that's exactly where I wanted to be.
You refer to Matt, and of course that's head coach Matt Kagan. It sounds as though, based on what we talked about before, that there was a sense of a genuine bond, something immediately, that he saw something in your game. You loved what he shared with you about the vision at Oregon State and the rebuilding thing that you're talking about. So maybe bring us into that a little bit, how you knew that he really liked you, that you played when you played in front of him when he was scouting you. You played well. You knew that there was a bond. Something was resonating between the two of you, huh?
Yeah, I remember my first phone call with Matt, and he immediately described to me the culture of the team and what he wanted to build, the foundation, the unity he wanted within us. And that immediately struck a chord with me because that had always been put before anything else with the teams I'd been on previous. It was all about connecting with the team, playing for one another, and knowing that the person beside you would do absolutely everything they could to help and support you on and off the field. And that was really important to me, and he emphasized that so much in the phone call. And when he came down to see me play in person, he could see that I would absolutely do everything I could for the person beside me. I would work my butt off to try and defend, attack, get in the best position possible, work with the people around me to give everybody the best chance to show and emphasize their skills and talents. And I know that that was really important to him, and he knew it was really important to me, and that was how that initial connection came.
Now, I don't know what travel restrictions are because of the pandemic. I assume that your parents can't come back and forth, so they're kind of relegated to the stream to watching you?
Yes. Yeah, currently the borders are still closed, so I'm able to go back and forth just because I'm a Canadian citizen and a student down here, but they are restricted at home, so they watch the live streams, FaceTime me when they can, and try to stay as involved as they possibly can, because I know they wish they were here.
Did any of the other kids end up in the conference that you played with up there at that in that organization in Canada?
Yes, yeah. When I originally came down here, the four that I can think of is Caitlin Shaw is at University of Oregon. I had Allie Remington. She went to, it was Allie Remington and Allie Hay. They each went to one of the Washington schools. One of them was at University of Washington and one of them was at Washington State. I'm not 100% sure if they're still there, but those were the ones that joined me in the Pac-12.
Abby Schwartz, our guest on this week's podcast, also brought to you in part by Lacrosse Boots. When you need a pair of boots for any kind of Oregon weather, choose a boot done right. Lacrosse Boots, done right since 1897. Abby, it's so exciting, the win you just came off of. Now you go to the L.A. schools. Does a win, as you just accomplished over Stanford, what does that do for a collective belief about what you're capable of?
It heightens it. That is simple and easy. It makes us see that we know we have the capability to do it. We have the talent, we have the work ethic, and we have the support in one another. We know we can absolutely beat any team we go against. It's all about knowing our role, knowing our tactics, knowing that we're all going to give everything we can each game, and know that it's absolutely possible for us to beat that team.
Does play get rough out there? You guys,
absolutely.
Are there players you don't like and they don't like you, and you're going to hit each other extra hard?
You know what? It's funny. Going against each other in practices now, we all kind of know each other's tendencies. So we'll cheat with each other a bit. We'll kind of catch on earlier, and we'll go in hard. We try to be a little bit more cautious coming up to against these games, but
no.
It's always a battle in there.
No, I'm talking about the opposing team.
Opposing team. We are always told about the ones to watch. So our coach always depicts to us which players are the opposing team's quite strong players, quite talented, fast, whatever their specialty is, so we can isolate them, know how to deal with them, and ultimately stop them. I don't think there's any personal conflicts. Mm-hmm. It's all rough and tough out there. Everybody's trying to win the ball, and everybody's going to get everything they can, no matter who they go against.
That was a great answer, because I didn't try to bait you, but I was being a smart aleck with a little bit of truth in there that, you know, there might be some battles, and that was a very diplomatic answer. So that might be your future. Abby Schwartz joining us here on this week's edition of the podcast.
Now, Abby, I do want to ask you something, and I don't know the ethos and culture of your sport nearly as well as the sports that I've participated in and been around, but I know in basketball this year, more than ever, the so-called flop, you can be penalized for flopping in basketball. You're given a warning if you're faking as though you were knocked down and hit really hard. You flop. It's called a flop. And in the second flop, after a warning, results in a technical foul and a free throw for the opposing team. So flopping is frowned upon and looked down upon. It has struck me, it's almost proverbial in your sport, that players will fall back or fall and writhe and moan on the ground as if they've been near mortally wounded. Is that still happening? Is there a discouragement against it? What's the role of that in your sport for the Beavers and in the level you're playing now?
I will say it's strategic. Mm-hmm. So it depends. It depends who you're playing against. It depends what's happening in the game. I know that when you're near the box and you have the opportunity to go against somebody 1v1, you're gonna go. And if they're gonna make a risky play, if they're gonna lunge, if they're gonna make a tackle that isn't quite the right place to go in that hard, there's a chance you're going to fall, and it's going to be a good chance it's going to be a PK. It's all about knowing where you are on the field, what's happening, who's around you. And, I mean, I don't like it when people get very dramatic about it and overemphasize it and roll on the ground and then get up and take the kick. But I know people will be very strategic with it, and a lot of the time it's a great technique to have. So.
Okay.
I thought, though, Abby, educate us here, that was more in the pro game, especially in Europe, and I haven't seen it in the high school and college game as much, but you're saying it exists on a small level, at least near the penalty or near the box.
Yeah, I would say it exists. I mean, I couldn't really speak to how largely it's used in Europe, but I do remember, especially in high school and just club, it wasn't as prevalent in the game. I rarely would ever see PKs in the middle of games, so I'm not totally sure how or why it's creeped itself into the university game as much. But again, it's not really. I don't think it's the best strategy. I think that there's more kind of heartfelt ways to win. I get it. Every now and then people will, throw their hands down and be like, oh, it should have been a penalty kick. But
yeah,
when it's a 1-1 game, do you really want that to be like the indicator of the win? I'm not sure. I guess it depends who you ask, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Abby, when I mentioned culture and ethos of a sport, I wonder how long you've been in it yourself. Have you grown up with the sport? When did you begin to play? What other sports did you play? When did sort of a love affair begin with you and the great sport of soccer?
Yeah, soccer was the first sport I ever played. My dad coached me for quite a few years and then finally told me that I should try out for a real team and not keep playing on his team. So I played it growing up, and the other sports that accompanied it were field hockey and figure skating, believe it or not. And eventually figure skating and soccer kind of came head to head. And I had to choose which one I thought I had a better chance at and which one I had more passion for. And at the end of the day, it's always been soccer. It's always going to be soccer, and I can't see that ever changing. And now that's definitely led me to where I am now.
Okay, as you go through these sports and your experiences, and me now knowing you're from Canada, and me being kind of a smart aleck, but not, I have to ask you, is curling introduced to you at a young age, or is that something you grow up and you go be a part of, and then you go win gold medals in the Canadian team?
Curling. It's funny. I've never played curling, but it's shown to us. I remember doing it in elementary school. It's fun. It's not as emphasized as I think most people think. I think that might be a little bit of a stereotype there, but it's fun. It's a good sport. It's not, you won't see very many teenagers just going and playing curling. I think it comes more from family, or it comes more from maybe one develops a really big passion for it, but I was never specifically introduced to it. That's
the
one I was wrong.
Okay.
Abby, last couple of things. On the figure skating, though, you did participate, and I read in your bio online, for 6 years, so you gave that a pretty good run. Were you pretty serious about it? Did you get pretty good at it? Did you ever look and think, this could be a path for me to big things in this sport? Was it hard to give up?
Yes. I do remember figure skating was a massive passion. My brothers are both hockey, so I gave that a try and decided, no, I think figure skating's for me. Mm-hmm. It was intense. It was a very different sport to soccer because it was very isolated. It was just me on the ice doing solos, doing competitions. And I remember a lot of anxiety came with that. I didn't like being so isolated out there. And soccer was almost a release from that because it was a group of us on the field working together towards a victory. I really enjoyed figure skating. I liked doing couple skates. That was really fun. I liked doing the shows. I was successful in competitions, and it was very exciting to be on the podium. But at the end of the day, I didn't like how much anxiety came with it because it is just you out there, and it's all eyes on you, and you miss one step, you miss one cut, then that's a mark off, and it's very intimidating. So I'm definitely happy with the decision I made to choose soccer over skating.
Totally understandable.
Well, that's a well thought out answer to a question that I'm sure you've been asked a few times over the years, but thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie, I'll just throw this out real quick, Molly's Game with Jessica Chastain. Have you seen that film or ever heard of it, Molly's Game?
I don't think I have, no.
Okay, well.
Skater movie?
No, it's not about skating. It's about a skier, but with all the, and she talks about, well, kind of going through the narration. It's a true story.
Mm-hmm.
Molly Bloom, played by Jessica Chastain, but she talks about all eyes being on you during your speed skating thing that you're trying to do to make the Olympic squad, and just how one little thing, something in the ground caused her to go off the skis in a situation that led to catastrophe. How the intensity of that pressure constantly that can wear you down. A team game, there's a lot of pressure and you feel it, but you're doing it with everybody else. So you've articulated that very well, Abby, and we appreciate it. The final thing, and that is academically for you at Oregon State, what your long-range kind of goals and pursuits are. You want to play the sport as long as you can, I'm sure, but what about soccer and life after soccer for you in terms of your academic pursuit and what you see yourself doing beyond Oregon State?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that more so now than I had been my freshman year. It's definitely a goal of mine to hopefully play pro. I hadn't thought about that a lot until this year, but I definitely think that's a goal of mine. And talking more career-wise, I am interested in doing something in social work. Originally, that was going to be working with at-risk youth, but some recent classes have made me look in other directions. So it's kind of up in the air right now, but I know I want to do something with people. I want to be a support system for others, and I want to be able to help and encourage those around me to be the best versions of themselves.
Abby, it's been a real delight to get to know you a little bit this week on our local show in the Mid-Valley and here in this podcast. Thank you for your time. We hope you have a great, even if it's restricted in nature, a great trip to Los Angeles. And we hope that we can talk to you again soon and keep following you and the team this season. Thanks for taking time for us.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
That's Abby Schwartz, our guest, Pac-12 Player of the Week. On the offensive side, her teammate Kalen Freed, the Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Week. Fans cannot come into Lorenz Field, but
cutouts can.
You can support the OSU men's and women's soccer team via cutouts. Thanks to Toyota, Goss Stadium at Coleman Field, the softball complex, Paul Lorenz Field. Go to osubeavers.com to learn more how you can support. In a sense, in the only way you really can right now in that way, get yourself into these venues. Thanks to your local Toyota dealers. Toyota is planting a tree for every cutout purchased this year. As we head down the stretch of this edition of the Beaver Sports Podcast, we thank Lacrosse Boots and On Point Community Credit Union. But the OSU Beaver Store, Doc, is open for business these days.
Yeah, that's right. Beaver Game Day. Experience the OSU Beaver Store and also OSUBeaverStore.com, authentic source for beaver gear since 1914. And, you know, Willamette Valley Vineyards is a fine sponsor of Oregon State Sports and this particular podcast. Have you joined the Game Day Wine Club created by Willamette Valley Vineyards? Members receive special benefits and portions of the sale go to the Fermentation Science Program at OSU. If you've not already signed up today, go to wvv.com/gameday, Willamette Valley Vineyard.
I really enjoyed the conversation, you know, with Abby, she and her teammates and everyone involved at Oregon State, all students. I know there's a little mixture, I'm not sure how everything is being conducted in terms of academics, mm-hmm. but most of it is virtual.
Yeah.
And Oregon State, even before the pandemic, was doing a great job in the e-campus world and recognized, in fact, as the number four e-campus in the country by U.S. News and World Report. So check it out. They were well prepared for the realities that have hit over the last 51 weeks. Learn more about Oregon State's eCampus at ecampus.oregonstate.edu. Go Beavs. John, that was another very enjoyable conversation.
It was very smart, and I love her passion. Busy week and a very successful week. We were kind of opining that perhaps it's the most successful week in Beaver sports since you and I've been here in the last 22 years.
With so many different things going on, and I mentioned a lot of those achievements at the beginning of mm-hmm. the podcast, but go back and check it all out on the various team pages, highlights, videos, acknowledgments. With another exciting week ahead, I'm not sure exactly what direction we'll go next week with the podcast, but we'll be following women's basketball heading into postseason play, the men heading to Vegas next week in hoops, Beaver baseball. You've got a series at home this weekend right. with BYU. The Beavs are 7-1, softball 6-2, men's soccer undefeated going into the weekend. So these are good times, and we're glad that you've joined us again today, and we'll do it again next week for another edition of the Beaver Sports Podcast. So long, everybody.
This has been the Beaver Sports Podcast. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Beaver Sports Network.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.